Welcome to Highly Questionable. Izzy absolutely winning the t-shirt contest today. Mike Golic Jr., at least not celebrating the mediocrity of Notre Dame.
Save that for tomorrow, I guess.
What should the Colts do at quarterback now?
Okay, so the Colts were not happy with Jacoby Brissett. They just thought they had a guy, more or less. And so they decided to roll the dice on Carson Wentz, thinking that Frank Reich had Carson Wentz when he was at his best before, and he could figure out how to make it right now. The problem is Frank Reich is not an orthopedic surgeon, and Carson Wentz seems to need to go to one of those again. He's going to be out 5 to 12 weeks with a foot injury. So what should they do at quarterback now?
I don't know.
Like, one thing we know about quarterbacks is it ain't that many of them, because if there were, they wouldn't be going to Carson Wentz in the first place. They got Jacob Eason and Sam Ellinger, which would be great if we were talking about recruiting rankings of yesteryear. But that ain't where we are right now. I don't see an option for the Colts right now other than hoping. It's more like 5 weeks than 12.
Yeah, shout out to Adam Schefter, by the way, for the tweet earlier saying that Colts head coach Frank Reich was having foot surgery while we're waiting for all this news here. The middle of that tweet sandwich really threw me for a loop. As far as actual options, listen, is there some depraved part of me that would really like for the Colts to call up the third stringer for the Chicago Bears right now in Nick Foles just to reopen some very, very deep old wounds? Sure. Is it likely? Probably not. Now, reports are that Frank Reich told Jacob Eason, this is your show right now. We'll see how long that lasts. For my money, I would say you're probably sticking with what you've got in-house, counting on that infrastructure and just hoping, like Bo said, that you can get this guy that you've invested in back quicker than the end of that 12-week window.
It's starting to look like the story of Carson Wentz's career started off exactly the way it's going to sort of play out, is, hey, he would have won the MVP if he didn't get hurt. And now he seems to be getting hurt all the time, and it's just sort of messing with his career arc, and we don't know what he could be there. So if you're talking about a foot injury that's going to keep him out, you know, up to 12 weeks, you're probably talking about looking past this season with Carson Wentz. And, you know, you mentioned a couple of the options there, but the idea of maybe trying to coerce Andrew Luck, not into a full season of football, but, you know, 5 to 12 weeks, get those juices flowing. Just do the Colts a favor after, you know, suddenly left them hanging and without a quarterback.
Now, what if, let's throw this out here, what if this isn't a catastrophe for the Colts? Because Carson Wentz wasn't kind of bad last year. He hadn't fallen off a little bit. He was terrible last season. Like, by some advanced metrics, worse than Dwayne Haskins was last season. The Colts might have dodged a bullet by not having to throw him out there in the first place. And I say this about Jacob Eason and recruiting yesteryear, but the truth is, he is a guy that was taken high enough in the draft that you would presume that a team thought he had a chance to be a quarterback in this league. He is a dude that has some level of talent. Maybe that's the thing that works out. Maybe that would have been best case scenario. But it ain't with these guys playing. They just got to hope they were wrong in the first place.
Yeah, I guess that's it, is you better have really scouted that pick well, because when I see this, I go, oh, wow, for a quarterback who's been injured as much as Carson Wentz, they didn't really think through the depth as much as they probably should have on this roster. And hell, Carson's last stop in Philadelphia was a place that's kind of showed us over the last, I'd say, 8 to 10 years, how much investing in that backup quarterback spot is really something that, in this day and age, with the importance of that position in this league, you got to have thought out a little bit better than this, especially in Indy, who's kind of decided, all right, with the structure of the rest of this roster, especially that offensive line up front they've put together, they've been kind of comfortable going with a series of one-year leases at the quarterback position to see if they can strike lightning, basically kicking down the road and saying, we think the rest of this, especially the way that defense improved last year, can hold us over until that time. Maybe to Bomani's point, that time starts a little bit earlier than you planned, but probably earlier than you also needed to consider.
Would signing Kyle Lowry put the Heat in the conversation with Bucks and Nets?
All right, so free agency starts at 6 p.m. Eastern today, when people, for the first time, can talk to free agents, because it would be tampering if they talked to them before. Anyway, what we're hearing is that Goran Dragic opted into his deal with the Heat, which then would allow them to trade him to somebody else, and Kyle Lowry would be somebody perhaps that he could do a sign and trade with. I don't know if this puts them up there with the Nets and Bucks, because I don't know how good the Heat are. The team that went to the championship round, that went to the finals, is not the team that we saw for most of last season. But I don't know which of those teams is actually the real one. I do know this, though. If you're dealing with Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler every night, boy, you're going to be playing some long games against those dudes. Like, this is going to be a team that is going to be physical and put their will on you in that way. They've got a good top line of the roster if they have those guys there. They've got a strong organization. They've got a place that people ultimately do want to play. They could wind up being up there with those teams. They could give them a push in a series. Does it make them as good as those teams? Ugh, I don't know yet.
In case you're listening on the podcast, Bomani was winking during that first portion of his answer, meaning these players and teams have been talking all offseason. But this sort of takes me two directions, this conversation. Is one is going toward next year. If you look at the Miami Heat with Bam and Jimmy Butler and the addition of Kyle Lowry potentially, and maybe throw in like a Nicholas Batum, who's another guy who's been linked to them. Yeah, that's a pretty good group of players. You throw Duncan Robinson in there as a starting five. I like what I'm looking at there. Can they compete with Giannis and the Bucks and the Nets? Defensively, they can. They've already shown they can give Giannis nightmares, beating him a couple of years ago in the playoffs. And so it becomes a question mark. They're back in the conversation, if you will. But if you look at what Pat Riley had planned for this offseason, this was supposed to be the big Giannis get. This was supposed to be, hey, Giannis either gets traded to us last year or we sign him this year in free agency. Well, that's not an option anymore. And now you're talking about Kyle Lowry, and then there's that idea of maybe teaming him up with DeMar DeRozan again in Miami. That's quite the fall from, you know, Giannis and having a super-duper team in Miami once again. So will next year, will they be a top-four team if these things come through? Yeah, absolutely. Is it what they had hoped for when they signed Jimmy Butler and said, we're going to get you another whale? Probably not.
Yeah, this seems to be a classic case of overpromise and underdeliver in this one, the anti-Stu Gatz, so to speak, by the Miami Heat. I'd say this definitely does not put them in the same category as those top two teams, and especially not after this year. Like, yes, I think with every sport going through the last year and change, and with the NBA, you've got to kind of lump two seasons into that, it's going to be this weird exercise of how much of any of this can we hold on to and buy into wholeheartedly results-wise for these teams. To Bomani's point, I think I'm inclined to probably hit it somewhere in the middle on this. There's a lot of good in there. Again, the core of that team really understands the identity. The Jimmy, the Bam Adebayo, and certainly Kyle Lowry would fit into that in ways that I think are pretty complementary. But ultimately, now you've got a Bucks team that's, I think, a little more sure of itself now that it's busted through a ceiling that had kind of existed for them. There were a lot of mental demons that team had to slay along the way, in addition to finding the best version of its basketball team in that final series. So probably still staring up at those two teams, but at the very least, it's going to be a tough out.
Well, now the twist of knife on Heat fans. Izzy, did they really refuse to trade Tyler Herro to get James Harden? Like, did they really, really, really do that?
No. From my understanding, it was not nearly that simple. The one thing I will say, though, like going forward, if you like, we're talking, we just broke the seal on August here. If Damian Lillard somehow ends up in Philadelphia, yeah, we're having a totally different conversation here. This is like the Heat falling into fourth place in the Eastern Conference. That is all to say, this is just the first rumors of probably what's going to be a pretty busy offseason and teams sort of shifting and reshaping themselves. So it's not really the time to assess the Eastern Conference, I would say.
I liked it better when I thought they refused to give up Tyler Herro to get James Harden. That's just a much more entertaining story to tell.
Up next on HQ.
The idea that Kawhi Leonard is going to be some free agent prize every year from now on while he plays the game to make more money, I just don't see it happening, because betting on himself after this injury is probably one too many.
Who do you see as more likely to leave their team, Kawhi or CP3?
All right, so as free agency ramps up, both Kawhi Leonard and Chris Paul had player options that they could have stayed with their teams. Both of them opted out to become free agents. Now, with Chris Paul, it's interesting because he was due $44 million on that contract that came from a clause in the CBA that he put in for himself. And with Kawhi Leonard, it's a little interesting that he then opted out because he's got the knee injury. I have a hard time believing that Kawhi Leonard wants to live in San Diego so bad that he will commute to Los Angeles every day for practice, but he is going to leave the Clippers under these circumstances to go somewhere else. I just can't see that happening. With Chris Paul, it's hard to believe that he got this close to a championship with that team and would not want to run it back. But his old agent is now the guy that runs the Knicks. Worldwide West, a guy that players of Chris Paul's generation tend to gravitate toward, he's up there in New York. I could see ways that either of those guys decide to go somewhere else. I just don't think it's ultimately going to happen unless Chris Paul looked at that team in Phoenix and said, I don't think this team is as good as it was in terms of performance last year. If he is less optimistic about them than we are, then maybe he leaves. But I have a hard time believing that's the case.
I agree with Bomani in that I think it's very unlikely that either of these guys leave. But if you're asking me who's more likely, and I'm going to go back to the recent article written by our friend and colleague Ramona Shelburne talking about Russell Westbrook's quest to get to Los Angeles. And one of the things in there was Russ apparently before a couple off seasons ago called up Kawhi Leonard and talked about the option of maybe going and teaming up with him out in Los Angeles that Kawhi Leonard then used to go and recruit his teammate Paul George from Oklahoma City. All that is to say, being teammates with Kawhi Leonard seems a lot like working for Waystar Royco. Like, if you're there to make some money and do well, you might get over, but being there for the relationships is probably not something that you should trust. Kawhi Leonard's always been a bit of a wild card because we never really know what's going on inside his head. So if I was going to bet on one of them being the chaos agent, it would be the guy that I just heard dogged out Russell Westbrook behind the scenes to get Paul George.
Yeah, I think they're both staying as well. I look at CP3 and his two options are sort of the mercenary role with the Knicks and sort of bringing that team to, I don't know, the second round of the playoffs and being celebrated, or staying with Phoenix. The Kawhi Leonard stuff, while I do think he stays, I do wonder if the years of Kawhi Leonard betting on himself with the one-and-ones and all that stuff is over. Like, he's probably looking at the Clippers and saying, 5 years now? Because my knees are a disaster, and I have no idea how long I'm going to be able to play at a high level. If you look at the Clippers and look at the way Paul George performs when he is the top option, Kawhi Leonard could reasonably say, hey, I won't have as many responsibilities if I just let Paul George go and sort of work my way into the, you know, the fourth quarter guy, the guy who comes in when you need him type of guy, maybe a little bit less stress on his knees overall. But, you know, the idea that Kawhi Leonard is going to be some free agent prize every year from now on while he plays the game to make more money, I just don't see it happening, because betting on himself after this injury is probably one too many.
You know, this is his last chance to come up, one would think, and I would be really apprehensive about signing him if I'm somebody else. I mean, I'd be pretty apprehensive about if I was the Clippers, but I understand they're kind of pot committed on it. But if you're one of these other teams, he's probably not going to play next season. He already had significant knee problems coming into this. You want to be the one to pay for all those miles? Good luck with that.
What's fair to expect from Simone Biles in her return to the beam?
All right, so Simone Biles has been out for a week with DNP twisties, things that we did not know very much about, but we learned that having a case of those and jumping up and doing all that flipping could result in catastrophic injury. Now, the balance beam is the next event, and Simone Biles is going to participate in that because from what we've been reading, the twisties aren't nearly the same in that event because there is less twisting. It's more flipping. It's less of a risk participating in that, which is good for me to hear because I was terrified of the idea that if you're in your own head and now you're going to be up there on that thing that's 4 feet off the ground and 4 inches wide. Now, what is fair for us to expect? It is our opportunity to say thanks for the memory, Simone. That's where we should start. And anything that we get on top of that is gravy. If she wins a gold medal, we should treat it like it's an amazing story. If she looks pedestrian and just like everybody else, she's looked like something that we've never seen before all these other times that I don't think there's time or room to judge for it on this one. I think that we are incredibly fortunate that the greatest participant in this sport ever has decided to push through this and come back one more time. And we get to witness it one more time. This is the one time in sports where we have greatness before us and still at a top level of athleticism where it's okay for us to stop and say, give us what you have. Anything more would be gravy.
Yeah, on uneven bars, I'd be terrified of, you know, something happening incorrectly. On the floor exercise, I'd be terrified, especially as high up in the air as she gets. And probably the same on the vault, right? That's where she had the first event, and she bailed out after that first ball. But the balance beam, I feel like it's a little bit safer. There's not that much crazy acrobatics in the air outside of maybe the dismount there and some twisting there. So it would be that, Bo. It would be a way to finish off this tournament or this Olympic Games, or frankly, maybe even her career, right? And say, okay, look, I fought through this. I supported my teammates, and here I am. A nice, happy ending, whether it's a medal or whether it's just completing the event safely. I think, frankly, that's what everybody wants to see first, is her look somewhat normal, like she's gathered herself and know that she can recover safely.
Yeah, I know in the past in this particular event, I believe she won bronze in 2016 in this and has been a three-time world champion since. So you could say the expectations are lofty, but I generally tend to side with you guys. This is a, and we've talked about this and this word's been batted around a lot in this, but in my opinion, a pretty brave move to go and put yourself back into this instance, because with each event that she pulled out of it, it started with the team event, then it was the individual all around, then the floor, the vault, the uneven bars. So you've got this mounting mental thing also that's coming in addition to the twisties, dealing with that inability to kind of understand where your body is in the air, to all of a sudden it's, all right, am I going to be able to pull myself out of this and to take that chance to try and do it still on the Olympic stage here, when she could walk away from this, hold her head up high, and still be remembered as the greatest to ever do it. But the fact that she's willing to walk back out on this and try and say, I'm going to clear this mental hurdle in something, in an event that might be a little bit more comfortable, it's pretty damn admirable.
And I imagine she wants to walk out on this on her own terms. Like, I remember Charles Barkley's last season with the Rockets. I think he tore his quadricep tendon. It was the game in Philadelphia. And he did the rehab to come back to play the last game of the season because he was not going to be carried off the court for the last time. I imagine for Simone, she's not going to walk away like she did before. She wants to walk away as a competitor as opposed to someone who just couldn't make it back out there.
And this is an individual event. She's not doing this for Team USA or USA Gymnastics. They already have that difficult relationship there. And she's not doing it or taking part in any sort of team fault. It's just, hey, let me see if I'm right. Let me have my moment. If I do, great. If not, okay, still got a little bit more work to do. Time to play the game that's going to drink so much coffee to stay up for USA Spain tonight. Do you question? I already started. I don't know if you can tell. I'm sweating.
You give us topics and events and we question them.
Do you question which is the bigger deal? The U.S. men's team winning the Gold Cup or the U.S. women's team failing to reach the final at the Olympics?
Oh, we're almost halfway treating the U.S. women's national team in soccer like we treat the basketball team, where if they don't get a gold medal, all of a sudden we got to figure out if something's wrong. Is it that big a deal that they lost to Canada in the semifinal round and will not get a gold? These kind of things happen, right? They lost a game. I don't think that they're at a point where we should just expect them to dominate every single thing that they do. So I don't think it's that big a deal if they wind up with a bronze instead of a silver or a gold. But the men's team, I mean, they don't really tend to be good at much of anything. Anything that's room for celebration over there, we should go ahead and do it. Way to go, guys. Thanks for no longer embarrassing us in front of the world at the thing that they enjoy doing more than anything else. So for the women, it's like, yeah, okay, you'd like for them to have done better, but the men, about time. Way to go.
Well, the women also, like, they outplayed Canada. They outshot Canada. I mean, Canada just scored their one on a penalty. And the floor, you know how it is with soccer. It's like you're this far off, and all of a sudden you can look great, but you can't finish. And that's essentially what they looked like against Canada, and their offense was just a little bit off the whole tournament. The men's side, man, this is their second straight trophy of the summer. This is their second straight win over Mexico in a final. And in the previous final, Mexico had 8 of those starters back in this Gold Cup final. U.S. only had 3. This is showing the depth of U.S. men's soccer, finally. And as we go into World Cup play, we all know that that's all we really care about. Even when it comes to the women, World Cup, way more important than the Olympics. Well, they look like they're getting into pretty good shape going into the World Cup qualifier. So it's a huge deal for the U.S. men. They don't get to celebrate a lot.
Yeah, for Greg Berhalter and this program, there's genuine reason to kind of be excited about the direction. A lot of people thought coming in he might be a little bit too robotic of a tactician, but this team seemed to genuinely have a lot of like those culture points to rally around. It seemed like a pretty unique, close group of the young guys that, as we heard time and time again throughout the broadcast, were not the A roster. And so if this is an indication of where the overall program's going, it's great. And we know in North America, this rivalry with Mexico is always a pretty ferocious one. We get to see them twice in the World Cup qualifiers over the course of the next year. But I do have to say, now that we're winning stuff, we get to complain about the winter problems. We got to do something about these championship t-shirts, because they were trash when we won the Nations Cup. And I watched last night after this game. I would not have cared about this before, but now that we are in the business of winning these kind of things, I feel like we've got to address this and really up the ante on this. We see too good of stuff trotted out in all these other locations. The boys deserve better. Time to play the game that's also going to be up very late, but catching up on reality television. See or no?
You tell us what's on television tonight. We tell you if we're intrigued.
Today at 3:07 p.m. Eastern, Cleveland and the Blue Jays.
All right, we are going to revisit Cleveland series over the weekend with the White Sox. Brian Goodwin is at the plate here, wearing the Carlton Fisk joints. Walk off.
Nice little walk off there.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
Wow, yeah. That's height.
You can do whatever you want in that spot.
Yeah, I imagine that at some point when the other team was really mad, he had to be like, no, no, no. He's Tim Anderson. I'm Brian Goodwin. Different person. Izzy, you intrigued?
Very much so. But I believe that was the real reason that he showed this clip is so we can see Tony La Russa running out from the dugout. I don't remember how old Tony La Russa is, but this is exactly what you need to know when you ask his age. Hey, how old is Tony La Russa? Just watch this clip.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the scary part. You're not supposed to be laughing here.
Got hit in the batting. Whoa!
Now you're laughing.
Yeah. Hey, the last time I saw a man about that age run out of the dugout like that under those circumstances, Don Zimmer got tossed on his rump. Rest in peace.
Well, anytime I've seen somebody run like that, they're running toward a restroom, not toward an umpire or another team. So I believe that's where everybody got the humor out of it. He seemed to have lost a gamble. I would say.
Go, you're intrigued.
Yeah, I am intrigued. And Izzy, I recognize that run. The last time, I don't remember how this happened. I had coffee and then Chipotle in the same 45-minute area, and that produces that run.
All right, that is our show. Izzy Gutierrez is still in that same office that he swears he's going to get out of one day. Check out Mike Golic Jr., 4 to 7 Eastern ESPN Radio, Chiné and Golic.
I am the most red person outside of your immediate family, Bomani.
See you guys. Gotta go.
I'm surprised you don't just do it in the shower.
Ew. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.